Welcome, everybody, to Pop Culture. I'm Scott.
I'm Jason.
And I'm Monica.
We're back.
Woo!
Yay!
Oh, that's not enough.
A vacation like no other. And you all thought we were dead. Shame on you. It took
some of us were close.
A monumental. Yeah. You haven't had a great run of luck. It took a monumental film to bring us back together. A landmark watershed moment. We could have been reviewing like Killers of the Flower Moon, but here we are.
It was an opportunity. Come on.
Five Nights at Freddy's, based on the hit video game of the same name. Blumhouse just won't know when to quit.
Yeah, they just keep going and going, don't they? And it's like peppering something, a dartboard, with as many things as possible and hoping one will stick. It's the best way of describing Blumhouse, I think.
From the makers of such masterpieces as Halloween Kills and...
Yeah, well, it would be their good film.
You're still mad about Halloween Kills?
They've done that. They're I might think about it from day to day.
It made an impression.
They're absolutely got some good films. Like the Insidious movies and the Purge movies have their moments.
Yeah. No, there are some good ones there. That's why I said they just keep peppering us once.
The Town That Dreaded Sundown's really good.
I haven't seen that.
This one don't stick. It stinks, but it don't stick.
Well, it sticks for a different reason.
So this game was like huge, right? So when this came out, I was working in like a video game shop, and the merchandise and everything for this game was insane. Like, we could not keep Freddy's and Chica's and Foxy's and Spring Jacks or whatever they're called on the shelves. Like, it was mental how big this game was for an app-based, like, point-and-click game.
Yeah, it was a really simple game, technically. It's, if anything, the only thing that made it stand out was the characters and the design of it. Visual design, I should say, not the design in total. So, yeah, it sort of appears to be something that would be really good to utilize in a film. And I'd say some have utilized it well, but not the official one.
Yeah, I'd never heard of Five Nights at Freddy's until a handful of days ago. And here we are after having watched the movie. So, there's opinions.
Well, I'm going to start with the positive because I feel we have to do that first. And for me, there's that, but I actually thought the Jim Henson Company's rendition of the animatronic creatures and characters was really good. And, you know, that was really impressive. It was sort of a case of the production design and everything like that set the scene for the audience. It was just waiting for some great characterization, story and action set pieces to bowl them over. However, we kept leaving the scene to be repetitively slapped in the face with this lettuce-like dream sequence that just seemed so out of place that I can't even say is to develop the main character's motivation, because I don't know if it developed anything other than my boredom.
I didn't realize it was Jim Henson, but now that you've said it, it makes a lot of sense.
I didn't know that either. And like Scott, it does make a lot of sense. I guess from a positive point of view, I thought the animatronic animals, they looked amazing. The sets looked really, really cool inside this dilapidated pizza shop, which, you know, brought back memories of going to family Pizza Hut nights. And I think it looked really great. But in terms of the story, I felt there was a lack of heart. You have your main character, Mike, who I feel is being way too serious for the rest of what the movie's tone is going for. And it creates this massive disconnect. And his story kind of goes in this weird hell loop over and over again, where he's dreaming about chasing all the children to understand what's happened to his sibling.
Well, yeah, it's made worse from the fact that this loss of one sibling as a child seemed to be a driving force.
Ironically,
is ignoring his living sibling,
Yes.
It made him, as an adult, which made him really hard to empathize with, particularly because his solution was to go to sleep.
Yes. Dream, not just sleep, dream theory sleep.
I didn't dislike the character, but there was nothing to like either. Like, he was so mundane in every way.
I tell you what, the dream sequences to me, because they were so poorly done, I was wondering, are they wanting us to fall asleep so that we dream something better in these moments, or what is it? It's just, it was a mess.
You walk out of the movie, it was great.
I feel really refreshed. It was great.
It was really good, I guess. The first one creeped me out, like where he turned around, the kids were just there, and then they scattered on a beat. I was like, ooh, okay. And then it just kept fucking happening over and over again. To limited effect.
Yes.
Talking about Mike, that sort of earnestness of the background story didn't sit well with the ridiculous premise that we're in this haunted animatronics from the 80s.
Yeah.
Surrounded by them, I should say. And then we had this opportunity to go down a really strong horror comedy, I thought, which is what I was sort of expecting. But instead we've got this weird sloppy PG slasher-ish.
They're going for that, like that teen audience, because it is such a popular game with teenagers, I guess, or young preteens almost, I think, is sort of the market for this game, despite the quite twisted story that's kind of peppered in there.
Mm. Well, I mean, even though it's PG, it's sort of like, I have to say, it has to shrink in shame to some other PG films out there, like, say, Gremlins. You know, you can still do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel
like kill Santa, it's fine.
I feel that in trying to, I guess, market this film for a really broad audience, while having it based for like this preteen kind of game, it really in a way alienates everybody else, because we're looking for what could potentially be a really good horror comedy, or there's nothing wrong with a little bit of violent gore to make this a proper slasher film that's a little bit off the beaten track with animatronic possessed things. Unfortunately, I think trying to stick to, I guess, the values of entertaining a particular audience just means that everybody else is just going to have a couple of sticking points with it.
I was really hoping it was going to go for like a horror route. Like, it doesn't need it to be gory for it to be scary. Like, I could have this phenomenal, like, stalking alien in a pizza shop type film with scary puppets. I would have been very okay with that. But yeah, it comes out as this like wishwash supernatural drama with, and then tonally fucking bizarre. Like, I'm sorry, but like when they're like building a cubby house, spoiler alert, I'm gonna ruin the entire movie for you, when they building like a cubby house with the puppets and they're all having a good time, and I'm like, what the fuck am I watching?
yeah And I guess on top of that as well, you have a very thinly veiled oh my god villain reveal moment. You know who the villain is the entire time, surely.
Well, talking about that villain, Matthew Lillard, he had a weird meta contribution. I'm going to describe it as meta. And the reason is, he was the masked killer in Scream, right? And was Shaggy in Scooby-Doo, where the villain is unmasked at the end. And so I just had this weird moment where everything clashed together with him being unveiled. And I was going, what's going on?
But I'm all right. He is okay. So the movie begins where Mike, Josh Hutcherson's character, goes to his guidance counselor or work counselor to get a job, and happens to be given a job at this pizza joint that is in his hometown where his brother went missing, but he's never heard of it before. And then it turns out this whole time that his guidance counselor was actually the twisted serial killer and child rapist murderer, whatever, who ran the pizza, like. Long walk for a short drink of water. Come on. really? Like, is he just like, I know what'll get them. I'll be a guidance counselor. That'll get me all the victims I need.
I mean, it kind of works.
To be trying to find him legitimate work at first, though.
I think, Jason, to your comment that Matthew Lillard is having this really meta kind of performance, it's almost as if at the very end of the film where we have the reveal that it's just Matthew Lillard playing Shaggy, who's just done this really dark turn and has become the villain that Scooby-Doo has always chased after or run away from, rather.
He got so traumatized, he turned.
Yeah. too much fun.
They wouldn't stop laughing at me, Scoob.
It's all right, Raggy. yeah, like, I mean, to be honest, he did do well. He stood out. Like, it's weird how you get actors.
By a mile.
Yeah. But it's weird how you get these actors that can be given such a bad script, bad dialogue, no real character, and they just have fun with it and really seem to enjoy the performance. And so you enjoy what you're watching, you know, like Nicolas Cage. Now there's a segue. And this is where it becomes interesting that there's two films that apparently were referencing the game made much earlier than this. One being Willy's Wonderland.
It was almost like this just couldn't get off the ground. So other people were like, well, I'll do that.
Yeah. But yeah, you've got Willy's Wonderland and Banana Splits. And they both sort of go down the animatronic, you know, killer robot sort of thing in this weird kids' wonderland situation. But Willy's Wonderland's much closer to the concept. But it treats things in a way that it's doing it for fun, and it keeps the fun of that whole thing embodied in the film throughout it consistently.
It's totally bonkers.
Yeah, but that's what makes it really good. I mean, the concept of these animatronic animals is bonkers, so it's it's great.
Yeah.
I mean, go on, Monica.
You know, I was just going to say all this talk of animatronic animals that are also killers, I would also like to throw into the mix that Simpsons episode where they go to Itchy and Scratchy Land and all the animatronics go insane and they go on a murderous rampage.
Which, of course, is then going back to Westworld.
Yeah.
It's strange
it's
how
all Michael Crichton's fault.
Is it? Yeah, it is. Yeah, he's responsible for a lot, isn't he? But yeah, Willy's Wonderland and Banana Splits, they know what they are and they embrace it. It's the best way of describing them. And so you have much more fun with it. Whereas Five Nights at Freddy's is unsure what it's supposed to do with the game, or sorry, the interpretation of the game as a film. And that's where it just becomes a big mess in the end.
I feel as someone who is not horror inclined that, yeah, the jump scares didn't even a big old scaredy cat like me. So.
No. And interestingly, like if you see the game or play the game, it uses some techniques which the film could have used. Made a direct reference to them where you're pretty much just turning on lights and checking things, opening doors.
Yeah, looking at the cameras.
Looking at the cameras. And then all of a sudden there's one of those creatures there. And that's what gives you the jump scare.
You're looking at them kind of thing.
No. Mm. No. And it's almost like you could have referenced that and had a really effective moment with it. It's sort of sad because I just see it as a really missed opportunity of a film to make something that would have been quite a cult film where Willy's Wonderland took that away from it, because I reckon that's a cult film that's going to stick around for a long time.
Maybe Five Nights at Freddy's 2 will get it right.
Maybe.
Matthew Lillard signed a 3-picture deal, I mean.
Oh, did he?
He did.
Well, yeah, maybe more Lillard will make it better.
That usually works.
Scream-esque moment. I'm feeling woozy. The way I felt watching the movie.
Yes.
Can we talk about the cop for a second? What the fuck was that? even before the reveal that she's like somehow in on it, there is this moment where she shows up at his house and is like, people broke in. You're up for criminal negligence. And then tell me your SAP story. It's all right. I'll throw your sleeping pills that I could have just handed to you because it's not really like criminal evidence. I'll throw them in a river. it's like fucking cop writing by children.
Yeah, she was only there, I think, to help the plot move forward. So that was it. Just serves a good function.
And I couldn't understand having an auntie who's trying to take responsibility of a child just to get child support
paid. Yeah.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to hire people to go ruin somewhere, so potentially get arrested and all those sorts of things. I don't know how much she was paying them to do that. And then, you know, get involved. And it's just... It was just that bad, I have to say.
what a get-rich-quick scheme. You know what pays well? Child support. Narratively, that are just like, why did anybody think like, oh, yeah, like Jason Blum's a smart guy? Was just like, yep, no, that's believable.
Yeah, well, it depends how much they get involved in the production would be the...
I feel like he's a pretty hands-on dude.
Yeah, oh, I don't know.
I'd like the amount, things well.
The amount being produced, maybe yeah, true. Not as much.
Because I literally finished this and then started the new Exorcist film, which was also a Blumhouse production. And I'm like, whoa, okay, he is busy.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, again, throw enough, some will stick. But this one didn't.
No.
This one missed by a mile and got my foot.
It's all that cupcake's fault. You can do a lot better, everybody.
I think anyone who's played the games will still be intrigued, regardless of what we say, and go and watch it.
Yeah, probably. All those 12-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
5 Nights at Freddy's. Just be thankful it's only an hour and 40 minutes long.
Yeah. Mm. Or just go watch Willy's Wonderland. You'll have a much better time.
Nick Cage dances. You'll love it. All right, guys. Thanks for listening to this episode of Pop Culture. I've been Scott.
I've been Jason.
And I'm still Monica.
Get it out, man.
I forgot who I was.
Oh, no.
Pop Culture is produced by and recorded by Jason Eddy, Monica Porto, and Scott Stouder. If you're enjoying the show, please invite you to jump on Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. It helps us expand the show and reach new listeners. And if you'd like to follow us on social media, we're available at Facebook at facebook.com/popculturepod, on Twitter at popcultureau, and we are also available on Instagram.